my name is Lillian Hensley, and I'm in the 10th grade program at Butler Tech. I interviewed Ray Gossio for my English project. Ray talks about a lot in this podcast, such as his age he went into Vietnam and after he got out of the war. Hello, my name is Lillian.
Hello.
What branch was you in? To just start off the question.
Army.
The Army?
Yes, ma'am.
How many years did you serve?
I spent 3.5 years.
3.5?
Yes.
What was it like there? Like, tell me everything that was really interesting about the Army.
Okay, before I went to Vietnam and all that too?
Yes, please.
Yes, okay, I'll tell you. You're recording? Because it'll be, I have to thank God for watching over me. And when I graduated from high school in 1966 in June, in August, I went to basic training for 2 months. I was a young guy, always like at home early with my mother and dad. And when I went to basic, they trained you to kill. And honest to God, it like, wow, a lot of exercises, a lot of reaction stuff. Somebody tap you on the shoulder, you turn, you move your arm up, your elbow hits your nose, and from there the bone goes all over. That's how we were taught. And when I got to Fort Carson, Colorado, I was in the military police company assigned. But what happened is, out of basic, I took administration school for typing. Well, back in 66, 67, no guys really typed. But the reason I typed, I played accordion. I thought it'd be cool to learn how to type and keep my fingers limber. Well, I ended up after administration school, 95 words a minute correct, every one of them. And I felt pretty good. So I went to Fort Carson, Colorado. I was there about 6 months, orderly room clerk, typing up orders and this and that. Then my captain called me into his office. He said, "Close the door, Ray." I said, "Yeah, I'll figure out." Oh my God, I'm going to Vietnam. He said, "We got a thing down request. We need 40 individual guys or girls know how to type real good for a year and a half project." I said, "Oh, really?" He says, "You want to do it?" I says, "Sure, where am I going?" Well, then he says, "You're going to be going to Washington, D.C., and from there they'll take you where they want to talk to you." So I'm saying, "My God, year and a half, Washington, D.C., geez." So I get to Washington, D.C., Fort Myers, Virginia, which was across the street from Arlington Cemetery, and we go into this auditorium, and this guy comes out, and there's 40 of us from different states. And this guy comes out and he says, "I am Secretary of Defense." Back then he was the head man. He said, "I need 40 of you guys. I want you to go through every fort, find out information." And we all kind of like said, "Information on what?" "You tell me. I want to see how smart you are." We're saying, "What?" So we were in Washington, D.C., and we went through every fort on the new computers that they had, which they weren't really up to date. They were huge green sheets coming out, and you had to read the green sheets and find out. And we're looking, and then a couple of guys said, "Hey, they got this much information received to ship out overseas, like 200 Jeeps to go to this place, 400 tanks to go here, whatever, whatever." So we start checking, and then what they did, they send information to overseas. "How many Jeeps did you get from Fort so-and-so?" They said, "We got 19 of them. 19? You're supposed to have 20. So they found out there's something wrong. Somebody's selling equipment. Long story short, I always say that, we were assigned to the Pentagon for a year and a half. Now, I mean, I'm 18 saying goodbye. We made big time. So we're at the Pentagon for the whole year and a half. going through all this information, wearing a badge that says top secret. Nobody would even talk to us. And after a year and a half, we found other discrepancies, you know, like captains making this much money and they're not supposed to, whatever, whatever. So when I got done with that, for a year and a half, I went back to Fort Carson, Colorado. And I'm going, I told the captain, I'm back. He says, great, what you do? I said, I can't tell you. He said, I understand, no problem. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Okay, so long as I keep saying long story short, I don't want to hold up your time. But like I said, I've been blessed. So he said about 3-4 months later, Ray, got a levy before you go to Vietnam. I go, oh, geez. Well, he said, you're going to the 196th Blank Brigade, Take Men, which is up north. And I mean, it's infantry. It's bad. I'm a clerk typist. So anyways, I did a good job. 40 of us did a good job at the Pentagon, getting all this information they needed. And I remember McNamara saying, you guys, good luck. Thank you. We'll remember you guys. Well, back then when you say we'll remember you guys, probably just say like, nah, good. They'll remember how good of a job we did. No, it's not. I'll tell you what happened. I get to Saigon, and this major is sitting at a desk, and all these guys are coming in before me, and he's got their orders, and he's looking down at them, reading. I said, God, this is going to take forever. But he was reading information about every individual, what they did before they came to Vietnam. We didn't know this till the end. So he goes, good luck, son. Good luck, son. Good luck, son. And about 20 guys in front of me, all of a sudden he looks down. Brigacio, yes, sir. Pentagon, yes, sir. I'm not going to ask you anymore. You're assigned to Cameron Bay, Vietnam. I go, what? I'm supposed to go to 186. No, you're going to Cameron Bay, 90 miles north of Saigon. 5 ships come in every month. We go and help manifest everything on paper, what kind of came off. And the captain was in charge. He says, Ray, you did a good job in Washington, D.C. I go, why? How'd you know? Your name's been watched, and you and 39 other guys. So when he said, we'll take care of you, thank you for a good job, this is what he did. They put me in Cameron Bay. Of course, at the time, we didn't know anything was going on, and we're unloading the ships by hand, getting in the water, going on the land, and then 6 months of the year, it's a monsoon. That's when the planes go by and they spray all the brushwork, bushes, because that way it kills them, and then any kind of fighting going on, you can see the enemy. They're not hiding behind a bush. Oh, we really didn't pay attention too much like that, but we got 6 months when it rained. We also got soaked with this Agent Orange they sprayed, and it was in the water. We didn't know, but we did a good job with the stuff coming off the ships, manifested. I go back and I type it, then they send it to Washington, D.C. What was shipped and what we received in, make sure nothing was sold or smuggled out. So once I was there for a year, I got my duty done. It was flew us back, and I ended up 9 months in Fort Rucker, Alabama, my last 9 months. That was the aviation where they trained young guys to be door gunners. I don't know if you know anything about door gunners, but they have helicopter pilots there, and they're teaching these kids to get up there. They open the door. There's only one door gunner sitting down, strapped in, shooting the enemy. So these kids are really wound up about it and, you know, think, wow, here's this machine gun. I'm shooting. Yeah, but you got one kid shooting, and you got how many Viet Cong shooting up at them? They don't last very long. But, you know, by being over there for a whole year, we had to deliver, you know, the goods in Vietnam down south to Saigon and all that. And the tech offensive was in 68, and the tech offensives were the Viet Cong hid bombs for a whole year from up north down to Saigon. And where I was in Cameron Bay, we never got hit until that day when they released all the bombs. And barracks were getting blown up across the bay, is like 300 yards. Buildings over there get blown up. And being like 19 years old, you're praying to God so bad and you're crying. And I go to the VA once a month or twice a month. I see a psychiatrist, plus I have, oh my God, I'm 73 now, and I got married 51 years ago, and my wife and I had two sons and great grandkids, and my wife and I are still together, thank God. And I have poor circulation in my legs. My sweat glands in my feet are gone because of Agent Orange, they tell me. And I shower every day, every night, and all this stuff, and I don't sweat. And I lost my teeth, left hearing on left ear, and they're all saying it's related to that Agent Orange. A lot of people that don't know anything about Agent Orange, please look it up, because what's happened, the Russians took over in 73, I was, or 75, when the war was over, they took over Camp Pompeii. It was, and you looked up on your computer, go 1968 Camron Bay, CamRahnBay, Vietnam. In 78, you'll see ships all parked there. Go Camron Bay 2020. You will see nothing but high rise resort. It's a Camron Bay resort now where people can go there in 6 months, with 6 months, go swimming, go eating the fish, going out there. Well, look on Google and you can see it. When I put that down about a year ago, I said, is there still Agent Orange in Vietnam? Yes. It's in the fish, in the land, and the people are going over their resort and all that, having fun, don't know about this Agent Orange in the fish, and they'll get it. So, I mean, like, it takes a toll on me to think about people going over there and how it was when we were there, and I go to VA and see the poor guys over there. I have poor circulation in my legs. I have compressed vertebrae with sciatic nerve damage. And my thyroid is zoomed way up to 100, then it went down to 20. It's supposed to be like between, I guess, 6 and 8 or 10. And they're giving me medicine for that, because if it goes up too high, like 100 again, you're going to have a heart attack, tremors, and so forth. So I got that to deal with every day. Plus, they ordered me so much for PTSD. And, you know, I just thank God, well, that's the only problems I got. I don't have problems. I do have circulation problems. They're trying to take care of it. But to see the other guys that are worse than me, like I say, I thank God. But now, the present time, I work part-time. My wife and I are 51 years marriage with two sons and two grandsons, and we're surviving. But now this flu thing came up, you know how it is. It's frightening me. It makes me feel worse, and I see a psychiatrist twice a month at VA. They talk to me and I talk things out, and I'm no harm to anybody, just myself. And that's what they put down, because I have a problem where I fly off on something that's like a trigger. And I hate to bring it up, but my head will hit the wall. It's like a trigger, and I can't help it. And I try not to do it. My wife tries to help me out. And right now, I have dinner every night. I get up early every morning. We have animals. We feed them. But something's been said, or I hear something, and I just... you know, like, lose it. I keep thinking back, and I try to, you know, get over everything. Like I say, to end this now, I'm blessed. So if you got any other questions, go ahead and ask me.
Yes, I have a few questions.
Sure.
I know you said you have some kids, but would you want any of them to go into the Army or, like, any part of the branch?
For getting educated, like I did,
yeah.
Now, I would say yes, because if my kids are gifted, one has a computer company, and my youngest is hearing impaired, but he wears hearing aids and he can hear normal speaking level, but he has a speech impediment. He's married, very happily. So is my oldest one, and they were of age where they weren't being drafted. But if I was a dad and the draft came up, I would tell them, once you just go for the draft, you get educated, you'll learn a lot, and just kind of like watch your back. And that's how I did. And I was blessed to get out okay. And, you know, I mean, it's like, it upsets me back in 66 and how they had the draft going. A lot of these Americans went to Canada to dodge a draft. And that upsets me because after a while, they had no draft. The United States allowed them to come back, which they should not have. It's not fair. You know, they run away from getting drafted. That's not being American. So, yeah, I would want my kids to go because good education, you learn a lot. You grow up to be a person.
I know you said you was in the Army again, but do you wish you went to any other branch?
I would think being 18 and out of high school, I said, what, the Navy? Oh, no, I don't want to be in no ship or submarine because, you know, like, God, that's spooky. And then I was thinking about the Air Force. Well, Navy and Air Force, I think they were at the time, was 4 years. I said, God, I don't want to go in for 4 years. I'd rather take enlist in the Army, which is only 3 years. And thinking of Marines, I said, I'm not, no, excuse me saying this, I'm not a badass, because anybody that's a Marine is really tough. Sometimes they're born killers. They're good people, good guys, girls, but you got to have good reactions. You got to, when somebody confronts you like we did in Vietnam, you got to be quick and not thinking, you just do it. And when I was in the Army, we were ready for action. We had our M14 ready to kill, but we were lucky not to see anybody. They said, you see anybody coming at you, shoot them. And I was crying every minute I'm watching. So the Army was 3 years, and I'm glad I picked the Army because it made me grow up. And like I say, you leave Seattle, Washington to go to Vietnam. That's an 18-hour airplane trip. That's a long time when you're worried about yourself.
How old were you when you went to fight in the Vietnam?
I got out in 18. When I was 18 years old, I got out of high school in August. I went to basic training, and then I spent 4 or 5 months in Colorado. Then I went to Washington for a year and a half. I was about 19 and a half years old when I went to Vietnam.
You said you was 18 years old when you started, right?
Yeah, when I started into the Army. When I enlisted in the Army, I was 18. I graduated from school at 18 years old. That was in June, and then in August, I was in basic training in Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Do you ever wish that you never went into any of the branches, or are you happy that you did?
I'm happy I went into the Army. I'm happy I got educated. I'm happy the people I met. I still talk to one person that was my lieutenant over me. I was a Spec 4 corporal, and the lieutenant was there. He was from Hawaii, and every month I talk to him on the phone, and he's doing well. And, you know, we don't talk about it too much, just saying about his family and my family. And thank God for Facebook. Once you're a member, you see that guy's family, they see my family, which is kind of like brings you closer together.
Why did you want to serve a country? Like, was there a reason why you wanted to go into the Army?
Why I went in the Army?
Yeah.
Well, I picked the Army not just because it's only 3 years. I picked the Army because my dad, rest his soul, he had three brothers. So there's four brothers that went to the Second World War. One brother was the MP in a different post. The other brother was in something else. And my other uncle, which is 94 years old right now, he's still alive. He lives in Lambertville, and I live in Ida. And I see him once a month. And he served with my dad in the Second World War. And back then, it was a terrible war. But my dad was in and my uncle was in the 3rd Infantry Division. And my dad never talked about things. But I found out through this letter, or it was like a news clip that I kept. And I asked him about it. He goes, well, where'd you find that? I said, it was in a book you had in your locker, or, you know, in your at home. But you keep it and don't ever lose it. I says, I won't. I read it. My dad, we're Belgian-Hungarian. My dad knew how to speak German. And when they took over Hitler's headquarters, you can read all about Hitler. He had, like, I don't know, two or three maybe personal secretaries. My dad was chosen to interrogate one of Hitler's secretaries to find out information about Hitler and the Germans. And I felt very honored my dad was picked to do that, but my dad never talked about it. Because, you know, once you see action or you do stuff, you just don't, you just want to, I guess, forget about it. Things that have happened to me in Vietnam, I like to forget about it, and sometimes something triggers it and I remember.
Over the years, have you got more open about talking about your experience?
Yes, I have a lot. I tell people I'm a talker, I'm a kidder, like I've talked to you this long. And the psychiatrist says that's being, you've got PTSD because you talk a lot, you want to get things out. Something that triggers you. I don't sleep very well. I very light sleeper. And just like right now, it something clicked in my head while I'm talking to you when I said I'm a light sleeper. Is back in when I was in Vietnam, we always had a knife under our pillow and our 45 with us. So we had villages of Vietnamese people, and you always was worried that somebody might come in our barracks or like to kill you. So we always slept light, didn't sleep very sound, always had the knife and the 45 with us. I mean, growing up 19 years old or in Vietnam, I mean, that's young, but you're scared for your life, so you do that. And I still, to this day, somebody might tap me on the shoulder, and I react a little bit, turned, and I stop. And people don't realize, you know, you don't touch somebody, you know, that's been trained like we were trained. And, you know, I fly off sometime when somebody honks at me because I might go 5 miles under. But then I have a tendency just to blow it off and figure, well, somebody else will take care of this guy. I'm not going to do it because the way life is now, if I stop that guy or cut him off, you don't know if he's got a gun or knife. So I just let the people go by now. I feel relaxed in my car driving, and I don't drive. It says 60, I'll go 55. You know, expressway 70, I go 65. So, you know, I'll stay on the right side out of everybody's way. But I feel comfortable and relieved in a car.
What's something you will ever forget about Vietnam or the Army?
Pardon me? I couldn't hear you.
What's something you won't ever forget about Vietnam or the Army?
Oh. Okay, like I said, I got my left ear, I'm listening to it, and sometimes I can't hear very good. But the thing that shocked me is when the tech offensive, TET, came through and the buildings were getting blown up all around us. And a lot of us guys were like, please, Jesus, help me. And we're all like saying it, but can't say it loud. And we're waiting for anybody to come over the bay or where we're seeing them. But luckily, we were shooting over there a lot, and nobody came over to the bay. And I remember about 10, we had maybe about 80 guys in a line laying down on their stomach facing the bay. And about 8 guys down, a guy goes, oh, he got hit in the arm, but he survived. And I'll never forget that. Because I thought maybe we would have gotten it. So I'm just, praise God, and there is a God. And it just, you know, shocks you. And the young kids these days, I wish they would go up on Google, find a history on things, and learn from it, and try to get along with everybody. Because everybody is a human being. Everybody, I don't care what culture, race, or whatever you are, they're people. And if you treat them right, they'll treat you right. The way it's going this day and age, all the shootings and all that, it's gotten out of hand. It's too bad.
Okay, do you have anything else you'd like to add or say?
Oh, let's see. I feel sad for the guys that went to Desert Storm, Iraq, Baghdad, all that, because there's a different war. You know, you don't know who. In Vietnam and Second World War, you knew the enemy. You could see the enemy. But in this day and age where the war is over there, they could be even sleeping in the same bunk, same barracks with you. You don't know. They could be spies. And I feel sorry for those guys. And it's too bad. I mean, one thing, if you got your leg shut off in Second World War or Vietnam, you had no leg. This day and age, thank God, praise God, you see these guys, anybody, period, not just soldiers, but they have these phony legs with the bent foot and all that, metal. That's wonderful, because you've got people that can run marathons with those on. And the guys are getting out of service and getting that put on their legs free of charge, which is great. So, really, that's all I don't have anything else to say, just that go on Google, any questions you got about things, and, you know, like, educate people and, you know, all these people to me that want to go on a trip. I'm going to Bahamas. Oh, boy, this is really great. Well, I'll tell them something. We had the pill, they called it, for malaria. You're supposed to take a pill every day for malaria and look up malaria. And then when you got out, they're supposed to give you an anti-malaria pill. Well, I'll tell you, they never gave us a pill. When we were there or out, this is something just triggered in my head. I remember I met my wife in Detroit at a wedding when I got out of Vietnam and got to meet her. And when you know it's the right person, it's the right person. I forget things. I was telling you something I was going to tell you, and I kind of never was going to tell you. Oh, the malaria thing. So when we got married, after I got out 9 months, I got out of Vietnam, and I met her on Christmas vacation, 30 days I had. And the third week when I got out of Vietnam, I got dreadfully sick, thrown up, even I couldn't control my movement or anything. I went to the doctor. The doctor says, you have a form of malaria. I go, oh, Jesus. You know, they never gave us pills. So all these people are going over the Bahamas and the islands and all that. You're supposed to have malaria pills. And when I met somebody about a year ago, and I was telling her my story about the malaria thing, she says, really? I said, yeah. She said, my mother had a neighbor that went to the Bahamas, and she didn't know anything about malaria pills. When she came home, she got dreadfully sick. So right there, you know, all these beautiful cruises and all, they don't care about your health. They want your money. And you're supposed to get these malaria pills, and you don't. And can I add one more thing that would kind of like really blow your mind?
Yes, sir.
When we were, yes, it was like 67 and a half to 60, almost 69 when I was over there. Are you in Cameron Bay? You look it up on Google. Please look this up. There's a radio station in Saigon that played all music for young guys. It's like 60s music, 66 music and all that. Well, here you go. The guy that was a DJ before he retired, he used to go, good morning, Vietnam. Well, you know, Robin Williams made that movie, Good Morning, Vietnam. Well, then when that guy retired, the original guy that said that, this other guy was a DJ. He enlisted. He saw that job in Saigon. He said, ooh, I think I'm going to try to take that. So he applied for it. They listened to him talk, and they gave it to him. So a whole year, I would listen to him on our radio. He'd go, good morning, Vietnam. He says, this is specialist so-and-so's name. I'll tell you in a minute. Signing off. At the time when he said his name, he was nobody to us. Like, really, nobody was a DJ. So we were, you go to Thonsonew Air Base, south of Cameron Bay, when we unloaded the ships. Then we said, we got to go to Saigon and unload stuff. I said, hey, guys, there's like four of us in a Jeep. Why don't we stop that radio station and see this guy? It's pretty cool. He's a good DJ. He says, good morning, Vietnam. And at that time, Robin Williams wasn't making a movie yet, so it was no big thing. It was kind of nice how you say good morning Vietnam. So we went down there in the radio station, and the guy came out for break. And, hey, you know, you sound good on radio. He said, well, thank you. What's your name? I says, Ray Gossio. What's your name? He says, I'm special, so. I said, oh, great. Okay, here it goes. The clincher. You got this on the recording. You play it back. Look on Google. He became a DJ there. He did that. He got out of the service, I believe, in 68 or 69. You look on Google. And he became another DJ in civilian life. Then he had a Tonight Show. And he didn't really like to do that. Here you go. He's celebrating his 38th year on TV. And I tell people, you know him. They go, what are you talking about? They laugh. How do I know him? You ever hear Wheel of Fortune, Pat Sajak?
Yes.
That's him. That was him in Saigon. He was the DJ. And he would say, this is Specialist Pat Sajak signing off. Have a good night. And you can look up on Google, Pat Sajak, military history. And you can also go on to videos, and I'll have him talking, music going, and he'll give you a whole listing about his military service. And that blows my mind when I tell people, Pat Sajak. And then what happened, I'm going to try to end this without taking your time. About 2 or 3 months ago, I don't know if you saw it on TV or the news, that Pat Sajak had to go in the hospital. Did you ever see that?
I'm not sure.
Okay, you look up on Google or ask people. He went in the hospital, he had stomach pains about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and they find out his attendants, I can't talk too good sometimes, I can't pronounce any of his attendants, were fighting each other and could kill him. So they gave him medicine. I guess he got over it, they were saying. But when I was at VA hospital in Ann Arbor, I was telling some people the story. He said, yeah, we heard that. Now, Agent Orange can hit you even 50 years after you were there. And they're saying, this is Pat Sajak. He got Agent Orange. It came up to him hitting his attendants and all that stuff. Like me, my sinus nerves bad now. I have a compressed vertebrae. My two sinus nerves burn sometime because of the flow of my blood. And they're trying to do exercise and, you know, give me medicine, and I take medicine for my hyperthyroid. But like I say, the experience of knowing Pat Sajak met him one time there, it's really interesting as heck. Anybody should look up on Google about his history, and it'd be all written down exactly what I said. So I don't know if you got any other questions. Go ahead, but I don't want to hold you up.
No, sir, I do not have any more questions.
Okay, that's great. I hope I gave you some good information, and you know, everybody can learn from that. You got it recording, co-recorded, and have them listen. And the things I ran into and how I am now, I feel honored being in the Army. I feel blessed having a family like my wife. She was a nurse for 50 years, and we're married 51 years, and you know, we do things together. And I think that's about it. And I really appreciate you interviewing me because it gives me a little bit of a relaxing break.
Well, thank you for taking your time out of your day and talking to me about your experience.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you have a good night and be safe.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Gray for talking to me about his experience in the Army. You can really tell after a while he got comfortable with me and talking to me about his experience. I would also like to thank the people that served our country. If you were in the Army, Navy, Air Force, or the Marines, or anyone that just helped our country in any way, thank you. While Ray was talking to me about his experience, I got sad because a lot of the things he said and talked about was really heartbreaking, such as Ray said that they slept with guns or a knife under their pillows every night. Also, thank you again, Ray, for talking to me about this and helping me with my podcast for my English class.